I didn't like her answers because they didn't give me the depth and breadth of experience that I want for a secretary.
Senator Lisa Murkowski says she is a no vote on Education Secretary nominee Betsy DeVos. But will it make a difference? From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, February 1st. Good evening. I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, low snowpack in the Dalzell Gorge have organizers of the last great race considering moving the restart to Fairbanks. Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by
Northern Air Cargo, providing year-round transportation of all types of freight from vehicles and oversized equipment to small packages for corporations or small business. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956. Artists, show us how you inspire Alaska. Apply now for an individual artist award. Deadline is March 1st. Learn more at rasmussen.org/IAA. This message sponsored by Rasmussen Foundation.
The Iditarod may once again be moving to Fairbanks. Though the decision has not been made, low snow along difficult parts of the trail are prompting officials to consider moving the race's restart from Willow to Fairbanks for only the third time in the race's history. According to the Iditarod Trail Committee, despite good snow conditions throughout much of South Central Alaska, the areas around Rainy Pass and the Dalzell Gorge do not. It's the same section of trail where mushers saw dangerous conditions that led to injuries and widespread criticism over routing during the 2014 race. The ITC says crews are monitoring trails closely and it will not render a final decision on the restart until February 10th. If the decision is made again, it'll be the second time in a row that the southern route is skipped, bypassing communities like Shagaluk, Anvik, and Grayling. The Fairbanks route extends west to Tanana, then down the Yukon toward Ruby, with a detour north to Huslia. The longest leg is 119 miles, a far greater distance than the biggest stretch along the traditional routes. Currently, there are 75 teams signed up to run this year's race. Regardless of if the official location is moved, the ceremonial start will be in Anchorage on March 4th. Senator Lisa Murkowski announced today that she will vote no on the confirmation of Betsy DeVos to be Education Secretary. Her decision follows intense pressure from her constituents who have flooded her office with emails, calls, and visitors. But as APRN Washington correspondent Liz Ruskin reports, Alaska's two U.S. senators are split over DeVos.
Murkowski made a speech on the Senate floor to highlight her decision. She said thousands of Alaskans have asked her to vote against the nominee.
And their concerns center, as mine do, on Mrs. DeVos's lack of experience with public education and the lack of knowledge that she portrayed in her confirmation hearing.
DeVos, a Michigan billionaire, has been a champion of school choice and vouchers. The National Education Association and other teachers' unions are campaigning against her. They and other opponents say DeVos would dismantle public education by funneling government dollars to private, religious, and for-profit schools. In much of Alaska, Murkowski says, there is no alternative school, and students need the public school system to operate at its best. The senator announced she'll vote no a day after she voted yes in the Senate Education Committee to advance the nomination to the full Senate. Murkowski says that's in keeping with her practice on cabinet nominees.
It's confusing to some who say, well, wait a minute, you let her move through committee, but then you vote against her. How does that all work? I think you need to put it in context with how I have handled all presidents' nominees to this point in time.
She says in her Senate career, she has only voted against one nominee in committee because she says he wasn't honest with her.
Mrs. DeVos did not lie to me. She was honest with her answers. I didn't like her answers because they didn't give me the depth and breadth of experience that I want for a secretary.
Murkowski's floor speech came right after another Republican, Senator Susan Collins of Maine, said she wouldn't support DeVos either. DeVos opponents are now looking for one more Republican vote, which would kill the appointment, assuming all Democrats are united against her. Great Alaska Schools co-founder Elise Galvin says Murkowski has restored her faith.
Well, this is great news to to us. I think this is our biggest sign that she is listening to her constituents, after all, at least on this vote. We hope that she shares what she knows with Senator Sullivan.
Senator Dan Sullivan, though, announced he's voting for DeVos. In a written statement, Sullivan said he shares Murkowski's concerns but is convinced DeVos cares deeply about kids and that she will return decision-making back to the local level. The final vote on DeVos could come early next week. Reporting from Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
She was a wanderer. Instead of sticking with her herd, Wood Bison 124 headed out on her own, traveling hundreds of solitary miles from the Alaska Yukon down the Kuskokwim to the sea. Friday at Quinnahock, a bullet ended her journey. She was shot illegally. Benjamin W. Moore, age 25, has been charged with two misdemeanors for illegally taking and possessing game. The meat has been donated to the McCann Treatment Center in Bethel. Bison 124 was one of 130 wood bison released along the lower Innoko and Yukon rivers in 2015 between April and June. That release was the beginning of the Alaska Wood Bison Restoration Project, an effort to rebuild a population of wood bison here after they disappeared about 200 years ago. The plan was to give the bison 10 years to have babies, find their range, and become a bigger herd before hunters would get a chance to harvest them. According to the state, during her wanderings, 124 had a knack for finding good bison habitat. Now she can no longer share this information with the rest of the herd. State health leaders say a federal repeal of the Affordable Care Act could make it difficult to implement reforms to Medicaid that could cost the state the tens of millions of dollars that lawmakers are counting on from the reforms. APRN and KTOO's Andrew Kitchenman reports.
Many of the reforms the legislature included in the Medicaid law it passed last year depend on parts of the Affordable Care Act. State Health Commissioner Valerie Davidson says medical providers have told her they hope to receive federal funding that was included in the ACA.
If Medicaid expansion went away, if that authority went away, that would really impact their ability to be able to participate in some of those reform opportunities because it provides them with a little bit of cushion for them to be able to do things creatively.
Some members of Congress have discussed replacing the current system that guarantees federal payments for Medicaid to one where states receive a set amount of money each year, known as block grants. Davidson says these proposals favor states with lower medical costs and low transportation costs.
We really see the block grants as really a mechanism to be able to shift that federal responsibility to states. The proposals that we have seen so far to do Medicaid block grants do things that do not favor Alaska.
More than 27,000 Alaskans received Medicaid due to an expansion that Governor Bill Walker supported. Another 18,000 residents receive health insurance through the ACA's individual and family marketplace. Senate Health and Social Services Committee Chairman David Wilson asked Davidson if she's preparing for a repeal of the Medicaid expansion.
Has the administration or the department come up with contingency plans for those type of scenarios, those worst case scenarios?
Davidson says the department is trying to plan, but the proposals could affect the state in hundreds of ways. She's asked members of the state's congressional delegation to ask for long-term estimates of state expenses for proposals to repeal the federal health law. Governor Walker said on Talk of Alaska on Tuesday that if the federal government stops funding the Medicaid expansion, it still would have benefited Alaskans.
And if we can't afford to fund the federal portion, which I think would be very, very difficult given our fiscal situation, we'll just have to be pleased with those whose lives were improved, those lives that were saved as a result of taking that step to expand Medicaid.
U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski has said Congress should replace the Affordable Care Act at the same time it repeals the law. In Juneau, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, how cold can winter wind get? Alaska leads the way when it comes to extreme weather.
Is actually the record for any populated place in the United States is a minus 100.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
If you're a rural Alaska resident, consider applying for a seat on the Federal Subsistence Regional Advisory Council by Friday, February 3, 2017. Applicants with knowledge of regional subsistence uses, customs, and traditions are needed. Council meetings serve as a forum for subsistence management. More at 1-800-478-1456. This message sponsored by your Federal Subsistence Board and the U.S. Departments of the Interior and Agriculture.
Alaska State Troopers say two moose have been found apparently shot to death in Alaska's largest city. Troopers say Anchorage police notified them about a dead moose shortly before midnight on Tuesday. The discovery near a local park came less than 24 hours after another moose was found shot to death near a busy road in another part of the city. Troopers say neither of the dead animals were salvaged by the shooter or shooters. Local charities recovered both of the carcasses. The first moose was killed early Tuesday morning near Burgaw Street in Anchorage's Mountain View neighborhood. The second moose was found dead near Valley of the Moon Park. A bill that would attach more protections to the Bristol Bay Forever ballot initiative had its first hearing in the House Fisheries Committee yesterday in Juneau. House Bill 14 is sponsored by Anchorage Representative Andy Josephson. KDLG's Dave Benninger has more.
The Bristol Bay Forever initiative was adopted by Alaska voters during the 2014 election. It requires the legislature to make a final finding that large-scale metallic sulfide mining within the Bristol Bay Fisheries Reserve will, quote, not constitute a danger to the fishery. Representative Josephson's bill would add another layer of review so lawmakers would have more information to base their vote on.
We're going to apply the world's best and most advanced science. And it does that by saying that the three lands commissioners, DNR, DEC, and DFNG, must have independently reviewed studies prepared. Those studies must be interagency, and they must be peer-reviewed such that they are scientifically supportable.
Josephson says his bill would require a further independent, peer-reviewed, open-for-public-comment study done under DNR, Fish and Game, and DEC so that lawmakers would know that no mining operation would pose a danger to any of Bristol Bay's fisheries. He specified that includes commercial, sport, and subsistence.
All of the privileges of ANILCA, December 1980, get wrapped into this discussion as well. And I think that's why the tribes asked for federal intervention. And now we can be the bulwark. We can be, because it's going to rest on our shoulders, not the federal government's, to protect this great fishery.
Pressed by Republican members of the committee as to the cost of his proposed new regulations, Josephson, a Democrat, said he believed it might cost a few hundred thousand dollars. He said in his opinion that would be money future generations would appreciate seeing spent to protect the world's largest sockeye salmon fishery. Most of the public testimony taken during Tuesday's short committee hearing was opposed to the bill and was delivered by supporters of the Pebble Mine. Many agreed with Pebble CEO Tom Collier that neither HB 14 nor the Bristol Bay Forever Initiative will stand up to a constitutional court challenge.
We think there are two other similar situations where similar initiatives have been thrown out by the Supreme Court. This confuses the bright line between the legislature and the governor's office, so it violates the separation of powers clause in the contract. And at an appropriate time, it's our intention to take that to court and raise that issue, and we think we'll prevail.
Josephson's bill has gained support from Trout Unlimited, the Bristol Bay Fishermen's Association, and other stakeholders. For now, it sits in the House Fisheries Committee for further review. In Dillingham, I'm Dave Benninger.
A recent legislative audit of the state's crime lab said the lab isn't meeting its target speed for processing SART kits, which include biological evidence gathered after an alleged sexual assault. Alaska Public Media's Ann Hillman learned what it takes to process a kit and what role they play in investigations.
Michelle Collins flashes her key card to open the doors into the entry room of the DNA laboratory at the state's crime lab.
We're going to wear masks,
okay,
because when you talk, you spit a lot of DNA out.
Collins, the forensic biology supervisor, explains that it's easy to taint evidence that only has tiny bits of DNA on it, so the forensic biologists take a lot of precautions. She goes through another set of doors into a room where a scientist is screening evidence.
She's maybe looking for seminal fluid, blood stains, hairs on the garments.
Collins says that's the step in the process that's been key to fixing the lab's DNA backlog problem. In December of 2014, the lab had nearly 400 backlogged DNA cases that include SART kits and other biological evidence. Forensic lab accreditation programs say they should be processed within 30 days. To fix the problem, lab managers streamlined the screening process, which Collins says made it easier to finish some cases more quickly. At the end of 2016, the backlog was down to about 120 cases. Collins says being fully staffed has helped as well.
It's very easy to get in a hole when you lose a staff member, and it takes a long time to get back out of it.
But Collins explains the lab work isn't what makes processing DNA evidence so time-consuming. It's the paperwork. She says once a DNA profile is created, it has to be interpreted. Sometimes it's simple. A sperm sample collected during a sexual assault exam typically only contains information about one person. But samples from scrapings under someone's fingernails aren't that simple.
Our reality is that our profiles are often mixtures of two, maybe three, maybe more individuals. And that interpretation is very complex.
Once a scientist interprets the data, it's sent to another person for verification. The back and forth can take a lot of time. For the crime lab, the goal is to process 90% of all the evidence sent there within 30 days. According to the legislative audit, in July, it was finishing only about half its cases within that time frame. Collins says processing some tests, like drug identification, is easy to do within the time limit. But that's not the case for identifying DNA in SART kits that contain multiple different samples. She said scientists try to complete those within 60 days.
Well, believe it or not, I mean, in Anchorage, we feel that the kit turnaround is pretty good.
That's Lieutenant John McKinnon with the Anchorage Police Department. He says it used to take over a year to get results from sexual assault kits. Now he gets preliminary results in about 3 weeks or a month. Would faster be better? He says sometimes, yes.
In some situations where we don't know who the suspect is, it delays the investigation because we don't know who we're looking for.
The crime lab does prioritize those types of cases, as well as ones involving minors. But McKinnon says in most cases, investigations into sexual assaults don't actually hinge on the SART kit results. Often the victim knows the assailant, and the investigation is focused on the issue of consent. The kit, it's just a small white box. It's filled with labeled envelopes and tools to collect samples, like fingernail scrapings and vaginal fluids. McKinnon says it's just one tool among many. They also conduct interviews, collect evidence, and work with nurses to conduct forensics exams. All of the information goes into a months-long investigation. But Collins, from the crime lab, says attention is often drawn back to the kit and the DNA evidence it contains. She says it's part of the CSI effect, expectations created by crime investigation TV shows.
They solve them a lot with DNA, so they definitely create an expectation that DNA is the answer, and that's not always the reality.
Collins says that as a result, her lab is sometimes asked to process SART kits, even if the prosecutor doesn't need the information to pursue the case. At the end of 2016, the lab had about 60 more backlogged kits to process. Collins says they're well enough staffed to be on track to finish them soon. From the Urban Affairs Desk, I'm Ann Hillman.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Alaska's Tobacco Quitline reminds you that 88% of Alaskans don't allow smoking in their homes. A smoke-free environment helps prepare kids for a healthier life and a future free from tobacco. And it makes good economic sense. Secondhand smoke damages property, decreasing its value. Exposure to its toxins leads to disease and increased medical cost. Call 1-800-QUIT-NOW or enroll online at alaskaquitline.com. This message brought to you by Alaska's Tobacco Quitline.
The Alaska Public Radio Network builds bridges of communication between urban and rural Alaska. APRN covering the stories that impact the lives of all Alaskans.
Alaska Pacific University in Anchorage is weighing its options to become more financially sustainable. Among its top prospects, to seek tribal college status. APRN's Josh Edge reports.
APU entered into a partnership in December with Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium. And high on the priority list following the partnership was to investigate the possibility of transitioning into a tribal college. Dr. Bob Anders, the interim president of APU, says the school and its board of trustees are still a long ways off.
I think it's a process, and so even and if that is seen to be an advantage to become a tribal college, it would take 3 to 5 years at minimum to get there.
Anders says the larger focus is making the university fiscally sustainable, which is difficult with just a little more than 450 students. Back in the 1970s, Saunders says enrollment was about double that number.
I think right now the focus is more on regular operations to ensure that APU functions as it is right now, and we can look forward to program expansion that may put us in a position to become a tribal college in the future.
And Anders says expanding programs at the university to help address the needs of the tribal health system could put APU in a uniquely advantageous position moving forward.
The innovation that has been created in the tribal health system related to healthcare is unlike any in the world, and it's looked to for its solutions because of that. And I think the partnership with APU was envisioned to create a university unlike any other in the world as well.
APU and ANTHC already work with Barrows Illisagvik College, currently Alaska's only tribal college, on a dental therapy program and on behavioral health curriculum. Anders expects the school's relationship with Illisagvik to continue. Whether or not APU will request tribal college status, however, that decision is still years away. In Anchorage, I'm Josh Edge.
A Fort Wainwright-based aviation unit will be largely unavailable for civilian search and rescues for at least a year. The Alaska Aviation Task Force regularly helps find and pick up missing and injured people from remote backcountry locations. KUAC's Tim Ellis reports.
U.S. Army Alaska spokesman John Pinnell says crews with Charlie Company 1st Battalion 52nd Aviation Regiment are packing up their Black Hawk helicopters in preparation of a round of intensive training at Fort Irwin, California, and from there they deploy to Afghanistan.
We're expecting the deployment to last about 9 months.
Pinnell says in the meanwhile, the remaining members of the 1st to the 52nd won't be able to help out with emergencies involving civilians who are injured and need to be medevaced from remote areas. He says instead the unit will focus on responding to emergencies on military land, especially on the Army's sprawling training ranges around the interior.
The main mission for the unit is to provide support for military training exercises.
Pinnell says the 1st to the 52nd helped rescue civilians about a dozen times in 2016. Under the terms of a 2015 agreement, the 1st to the 52nd would send a helicopter and crew to emergencies when requested by the Alaska Rescue Coordination Center. The center is operated by the Alaska Army National Guard's 176th Wing at Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson. Pinnell says plans call for the 1st to the 52nd to resume such assistance when it returns from deployment.
Between now and then, you know, any number of things could change, but as of right now, that is our plan.
The loss of the unit over the next year could cause delays in response to emergencies in remote areas. A news release issued Monday by U.S. Army Alaska says if the 1st of the 52nd is able to respond to a request for help, it may take up to 8 hours to get a helicopter and crew airborne. When contacted Monday afternoon, officials with the Alaska Air National Guard and Alaska State Troopers did not respond to requests for comment. In Fairbanks, I'm Tim Ellis.
The wind chill dropped to minus 77 in Arctic Village last week. That's the coldest wind chill recorded this winter in a populated spot in Alaska. Brian Brettschneider is a climatologist in Anchorage who closely tracks Alaska climate data and trends. Alaska's Energy Desk is checking in with him regularly as part of the segment Ask a Climatologist. Minus 77 might sound bitterly cold, but he told Energy Desk editor Annie Feit it's not even close to record territory.
The record in Alaska is actually the record for any populated place in the United States is minus 100, and that occurred in January 1989 in McGrath. So quite a ways from the record, but still low nonetheless.
How does the National Weather Service calculate wind chill?
It's an apparent temperature. So it's a combination of the actual air temperature combined with the wind. So some of your listeners, especially ones that work up on the North Slope, may remember wind chills that were as low as minus 120 back in January 1989. And that's kind of the low water mark for wind chills. But in 2001, the National Weather Service reconstituted the formula for wind chill. And so when you calculate it using the new formula, it is those were in the minus 80s and minus 90s. So cold, but not as cold as what some people might recall if they were around 25 years ago.
How did the National Weather Service arrive at this new formula?
Well, if you go back, the original wind chill formula was based on experiments conducted on how long it took water to freeze on top of a hut in Antarctic research stations. And they determined that over the years that really wasn't the best way to estimate what the apparent temperature is for what people experience. So they conducted some wind tunnel experiments and some other kind of theoretical models in the late 1990s. And so they came up with this new formula in 2001 that much better represents the combined effect of the temperature and the wind and how people perceive that. So the net effect of that is high wind speed events, there's a diminishing return on wind chill. So 30-mile-an-hour wind doesn't get you much lower wind chill than, say, a 20-mile-an-hour wind. And also at low, low temperatures, even a small wind really jumps the wind chill value up.
So now temperatures make a bigger difference than the wind.
Previously, the wind really accelerated the wind chill. So once your wind increased by every 5 miles an hour, your wind chill dropped dramatically. Now that levels out quite a bit more with a focus on the first few miles an hour of the wind speed. So it's the temperature that becomes the dominant player in the wind chill formula as it's reconstituted in 2001.
Brian Brettschneider is a climatologist who lives in Anchorage. He spoke with Annie Feit from Alaska's Energy Desk as part of a regular look at climate change in the state. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found at our website, alaskapublic.org. You can also follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Anna Rose MacArthur in Bethel, Andrew Kitchenman in Juneau, Dave Benninger in Dillingham, Tim Ellis in Fairbanks, and Annie Feit, Josh Edge, Ann Hillman, and Zachariah Hughes in Anchorage. Our audio engineer is Eric Bork. Sean Dugan is our editor and producer. Wesley Early is our web editor. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Condor Airlines, with nonstop service from Anchorage and Fairbanks to Germany and beyond. More information available on condor.com. Condor, born to fly.
And by
Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, now distributing Boss Industrial Log Splitters, stocking gas and electric up to 34 ton. On the web at arcticwirerope.com. As it turns out, you don't need to wear a cape to save the community or a giant S on your chest to stand up for what's right. That's because the University of Alaska is working to build a better future for our state. Through education, the university is developing a skilled workforce with more teachers, engineers, and nurses to move Alaska forward. Join the university in leading the change Alaska needs. Visit drivechangeak.org to learn more. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska.
Providing statewide news coverage since 1978, we are the Alaska Public Radio Network, APRN, your source for Alaska's news.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.